Welcome to the High Premises Files podcast with me, your presenter, Charlotte Howden. I'm an HG campaigner and the co-producer and presenter of the world's first documentary about High Premises. Sick, The Battle Against HG is available now on Prime Video in the UK and the US, with other countries following soon. The High Premises Files podcast acts as a voice for all women who are currently suffering with or who have survived High Premises Gravidarum. On today's podcast, I'm joined by Sophie. Sophie is a mum of one, she's 23 years old, and she lives in Redcar in the northeast of England. Sophie's High Premises pregnancy started like most of ours do. From the moment she found out she was pregnant, the sickness began. She struggled keeping food, water down, and was running to the toilet every 2 minutes to be sick. And of course, this was all happening during a global pandemic, and in the UK, during our first lockdown. This is Sophie's High Premises story.
So Sophie, how your pregnancy started? Quite traumatically, really, didn't it? Tell me in your own words, what was happening to you at that time and what you were experiencing?
From like the 8 week mark of pregnancy, maybe even earlier, I was struggling to keep food down and drink. I was being sick, bringing up blood. It was just horrible. And there wasn't a time where I wasn't near a toilet. I had to keep a bowl by me by like every single day, take it with me when I was going to hospitals and all that. It was horrible, horrible.
And at this time, you know, obviously you find out you're pregnant, you're excited, and then obviously these kind of symptoms start coming on, and you would have been working at this point, I assume.
Yeah, I was working in a nursery. So with COVID, I was instantly made a higher risk, but it was even harder with the sickness.
Yeah. Well, you've mentioned COVID, but finding out you're pregnant during a global pandemic is probably not something that you had on your wish list of things to happen and then to get High Premises. But I mean, what was that like when you realised you're going to have to go through what was probably going to be a difficult pregnancy during a global pandemic?
It was made harder because my boyfriend and my family weren't even allowed to come to appointments or scans. So when you're pregnant, it's meant to be a happier time, like a joy time, but it wasn't. It was just awful. It was really, really awful, like I said. It took all the fun out of it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does, doesn't it? And I can imagine, I mean, for me, it wasn't during a time where partners and you know, anyone could have come to hospital in my pregnancy. It would not have been an issue at all. Obviously for you in that initial period, it was doing it by yourself, which must have been so, so tough.
It was made harder because I had the support there. It wasn't that at the hospital where I needed it the most, because I can't remember much of it, and I really needed someone there with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sophie struggled through until she was 8 weeks pregnant, and it was at that point that she decided that she really needed some help. She rang her doctors, like we all do, to see if there was anything that could be done for her. I think we all know what's going to happen next. She was told very simply, there is nothing that we can do for you, and we suggest that you go to A&E to help with your sickness.
9 weeks, it got really bad, and I was like bringing up blood. I was like, is that meant to happen? And so I rang the doctors, and they said, oh, because you can't come in, you have to go to A&E, and we can't do anything for you, so go to A&E and see what happens from there.
Okay, so they were blaming the situation of COVID and saying that you weren't able to come in to see them, which I'm pretty sure isn't quite accurate, actually, because obviously people still needed to see their GP. So they obviously decided that because you were pregnant, or I'm assuming they decided because you were pregnant, that you just weren't of importance to them. And so you had to just take yourself off to A&E, which is just horrible.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, just go to A&E because we can't be dealing with you at the minute.
So what happened then when you went to A&E? What happened there?
I had to go in A&E and I was there for about an hour before I got seen to. And before you get seen to, you get assessed by a nurse.
Mm.
So I got assessed and she said, we can't do anything for you. You're just being sick, calm down. And there's probably anything we can't do for you.
Wow. So you've waited that long. Someone comes and assesses you and basically tells you that you're, you know, not that you're making it up, but you just need to get on with it, basically. And there's basically nothing they can do.
Yeah, get on with it because you're only pregnant kind of thing. That's what you kind of, that's what it kind of came across as. You're pregnant, calm down. There's nothing we can do.
So did she send you on to see anyone else? Or was she literally the one to then say you might as well go home?
After that initial meeting with the nurse, you had to go back to the waiting room and wait another hour before going to the actual main A&E.
Wow.
To get assessed. And then when I went through the main A&E, the doctor said, oh, you need to do a sample. And I never heard of this before, like ketones and your wee and that.
Mm.
So she said, oh, your ketones is really high. And I said, well, I don't know what ketones is.
And did she explain it or?
She just said, I can't really remember, to be honest, but she was just like, it just means that there's something in your way because you're being sick and that.
And then what happened? Was there any kind of offer of treatment or were you allowed to stay in or?
I got took to the maternity assessment unit via wheelchair because I couldn't walk. No. I couldn't breathe and it was made harder with the masks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I went to MAU and straight away I was put on fluids, but it took about 3 or 4 attempts to get the IV in my hand.
Oh, Sophie, it just sounds horrendous. So obviously the MAU is the maternity assessment unit. So basically your treatment there was you saw the nurse, she basically dismissed you. You had to go and wait another hour to then go on and see someone else who might be able to help. You do that, you're then taken to see that person, and it does sound like they then try to help you by giving you fluids. How long did you stay in A&E at that at the unit at that time?
I think it was about 3 hours because the first bag of fluids was for an hour and then the second bag of fluids for 2 hours.
And then you were just discharged?
I had to eat something and drink and they just let me go.
Wow. And did they tell you if they'd given you anything other than fluids or had they given you any anti-sickness medication or was it just the fluids?
They gave me an anti-sickness injection into my thigh.
Right, okay. But did they tell you what it was, like what they were giving you or?
They just said, oh, this is to stop the sickness and to make you feel a little bit better. That's right. All they said.
So again, not particularly helpful. And this is really common, actually. I don't know if this will help you in knowing this, that, you know, and it happened in my own experience where I would go in hospital and they would give me something but they weren't actually telling me what they were giving me. And you know, from my own experience, I have said this before and perhaps I've said it a bit too flippantly, like they could have given me anything, I didn't really care because I was so ill. But in hindsight, I think it would have been really nice and important for me to know exactly what they were giving me. And I wondered if you felt the same.
Yeah, I did. I was just like, my mum was like, oh, what they give you? And I went, well, mum, I don't know. They didn't say anything. They went, ask. Well, ask. They said, when I asked, they just go, oh, this is to do this and that's all. Like, with me, I don't grasp understanding or anything. So I have to have, like, the dumbed-down version of stuff.
Like, but I think we all do, though, in medical stuff, yeah. Don't we? Because none of us know. You know, I mean, some of the names, I mean, even the name hyperemesis gravidarum itself. I mean, when I first saw that, it took me quite a few attempts to work out how to even pronounce it. Like,
yeah, I was struggling.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. It's really difficult. So, you know, don't put yourself down. Or I think a lot of people, men and women do need that dumbed down version because we're just not medically trained in that way.
Yeah.
So, you are discharged, you've been there for 3 hours, you're not quite sure what you've been given, but you were able to eat something and drink something, which was obviously their standard of, right, you can leave now.
Sophie could not have known at the time, but this was going to become quite a common thing. Going into the MAU, having fluids and possibly some kind of anti-sickness medication, and then being sent home.
How long after getting back home did you start to feel unwell again?
I felt fine for 2 days, and then it just started again, and I was just like, is this for real? I felt like my normal self for 2 days, and it's just started again.
And so after that happened, did you end up back again in A&E? Was this going to be a bit of a cycle now?
No, this time I just went straight to MAU, and just again fluids for the 3 hours, and then sent back home.
Yeah. How many times do you think you were at the MAU during your pregnancy?
About 8 or 10 times. I lost count. I said to them, you may as well just put my own bed up here because I'm always here every week.
Yeah.
Or every other week, I'm that sick.
And was it always the same, Sophie? Was it always, look, here's some fluids, you know, hook you up to an IV, here's another anti-sickness injection, and then you were literally just on your way again. Every time you went in, they did that, and then they would just send you home again.
Pretty much, yeah.
And did they ever tell you or offer that you should have medication to take at home to kind of keep you going?
I think it was about the 5th admission to MAU. They kept me in and for a couple of days, and they finally gave me some medication.
Mm.
I think, was it Cyclozine?
Cyclozine, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they gave me Cyclozine, and I had, what else did I have? Oh, I forgot.
There's quite a few, isn't there?
Yeah, they gave me like anti-reflux tablets because I had bad acid reflux with my baby, really bad, and that was made the sickness worse.
Yeah, of course it would do. So when you got home and you then had the Cyclozine to take at home, was that keeping you out of hospital?
Yeah, but I would still be sick, but not as the large amount that I was having when I started the pregnancy.
And how long did this go on for? How long was this kind of cycle of going to the MAU, taking in Cyclozine and perhaps some other medications? How long did this period last for? I mean, was it just the first trimester, second, or was it the whole pregnancy?
The whole pregnancy, pretty much, to the very end.
Wow.
I mean, until I had it, yeah.
That's a huge thing to go through. And, you know, it sounds like, yeah, this cycle that you just had to keep going there and hopefully get something when you got home.
Through all of this, of course, Sophie was unable to have her mother or her boyfriend with her when she was going in hospital. When she got home, though, she did have them, and their support was invaluable. And she really does credit her mother specifically with helping her through this horrible ordeal.
I mean, what was it like for you when you were at home going through all that? Did you have support at home?
Yeah, I live with my mum and my boyfriend. So I had the support there, but it was hard because my mum said she couldn't feel like she could have done anything seeing her own daughter in that state. She said if it was her, she would take it away from me, kind of thing.
Yeah. Do you know what? I think that's exactly what my mum said. She said it was the first time she'd see me where she wasn't able to do something, like she couldn't make it better. And so that must have been really hard on her and your boyfriend as well, because you've never experienced anything like this, and they hadn't either.
No, they were just, she said, if I could take the pain away from you, I could. I just felt horrible.
Yeah, yeah. So we talked about how the sickness was there for the majority of your pregnancy, but you didn't go to full term, did you? So the last time you ended up at the MAU, not long after that, you actually went into labour.
It was a week, a couple of days before Christmas, and I was particularly ill that week. My tongue got infected and it was really black.
Oh.
So I couldn't eat or drink. I didn't go to the toilet for about 5 weeks.
Wow.
Like past my bowels and that. So I went to MAU and they said, well, nothing we can do. You have to go to A&E to get seen too. So I got turned away again.
Oh my God. So you would have thought, I mean, they'd seen you quite a few times. Like you said, you were kind of, quite a regular visitor to the MAU, you would have thought there would have been something they could have done, even to maybe just bypass you having to go and sit in A&E and, you know, go through that again.
So yeah, they said it's not their problem. They can't deal with it. So there's me slumped in this wheelchair going, I can't walk all the way to A&E. Yeah.
So when you got to A&E then, I assume you obviously had to wait again. And then when they did see you, did they explain what had happened with your tongue? And did they have a way of helping you with that?
I think they said it was thrush, like really bad thrush in my tongue.
Right. Yeah.
So I got took to the resource room where I was hooked up to vitamin K fluids again. And I was in there for about 3 hours. Until getting put onto the labour ward.
See, that again, now you've said that it was thrush, that is quite common, because obviously when you're really poorly like you had been, your throat from all the sickness and the vomiting, the healthy bacteria that you have there just disappear, which is why this thrush is quite common. So I'm really surprised the MAU didn't say to you, look, we know why this is happening, and we need to get you some treatment. That's just awful. And then you ended up on the labour ward. So why did they send you to the labour ward?
Because they said I couldn't be in resource and it's safer to me to be on there.
Right, okay.
And there'd be more like midwives looking after me.
Sure.
Whereas at MAU, the limited kind of thing.
And what was that experience like when you were there? Were they good to you? Were they looking after you? Did they understand what you've been through?
Yeah, they were very nice, like, to the difference I was getting from MAU. They were really nice. This lady came in every hour on the hour, checked on me, made sure if I want anything. She was lovely, very, very lovely.
Again, Sophie wouldn't have known at this point that actually being on the labour ward wasn't just a good thing because of the treatment she was getting from the lovely midwives, but because very soon she was going to be having an emergency C-section.
So obviously you're there, you're recovering from the thrush that has taken over your tongue. And what happened next? Because you went into labour, didn't you, at 30, was it 35 weeks and 5 days?
35 weeks and 5 days, yeah. What happened was I went for a scan on the baby on the Tuesday before Christmas, and they said, oh, there's not enough fluid around baby. She's measuring small, so we have to bring her tonight. Kind of thing.
Wow.
By an emergency C-section.
Yeah. What was that like? I mean, was it, with everything you've been through, I can imagine a part of you might have been thinking, oh, this is, you know, this is great because this pregnancy has been horrible and I just want her here. But then another part of you must have been thinking, but you know, it's early, it's 4 or 5 weeks early.
Yeah, I was just I was happy because she was finally coming and I could start feeling like my normal self again.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of the coin is I kind of wish I had a normal pregnancy. Like I would have gone through labour, my water's breaking. I just, as mad as this sounds, I wanted to experience that and I felt it got took away from me kind of thing.
No, I understand that. I think a lot of women do when it's, you know, if you have a planned C-section, that's a decision you've made, right? But to have an emergency one, it's very quick, isn't it? It has to happen. You know, you didn't have much fluid around her. She was measuring small. So they wanted to get her out and make sure she was okay. So I can imagine, you know, after everything you've been through, you thought, well, it would just be nice to have one thing that was normal.
Yeah, I was wanted that one normal thing.
Yeah. So when was your daughter born?
She was born on the 22nd of December 2020 at 9 o'clock at night.
So you're still still a new mum. We're only just got into February. So how are you feeling now after everything that you've been through?
I'm still recovering. My section scar is very numb at the minute.
Yeah.
But it's going to take me a long time to recover from the sickness and everything I went through.
Yeah. Did it go away as soon as she was born?
It took a couple of days. I wasn't sick, but I still felt sick. It took a couple of days for that to go, and it took a couple of weeks on my appetite and everything to come back.
Yeah.
But I'm okay now, as I say, I'm okay.
Yeah. How are you feeling mentally about everything you've been through? Because it's such a big thing.
during the time I was very low and I was on sertraline for my anxiety and depression. And I couldn't take that because that was making me sick.
Right, okay.
So I was low on my mood anyway, but soon as I, after I had her, I got back on that medication and I feel better as ever.
Yeah, I feel like myself again.
Yeah,
well, that's brilliant. That's really good to hear. Because especially when you're pregnant, you know, if you do have anxiety or depression, keeping up those medications is really essential, isn't it? So they were making you sick. Gosh, that was just another thing to have to worry about, wasn't it? That you weren't able to take something that you knew would usually help you.
Yeah.
So where do you stand now in terms of, I mean, I've got two more questions to ask you. If you could speak to now to someone who's suffering with hyperemesis, what would you say to them?
I'd say get the treatment and ask for it straight away. Do your research on it because there's little known about it and that's what gets me about it. There's nothing.
And how do you feel now about possibly having more children in the future? Is it something you've thought about or?
I would love to have more children. I would love to, but the sickness and how I felt, as mean as it sounds, it's just put me off having another baby.
Yeah, yeah. And you are a very new mum as well. So you are still going through that initial kind of adapting to having a baby and everything anyway. But it's probably a little bit of an unfair question because your daughter's, you know, she's only a couple of months old.
Yeah.
So I know at that time, no one wants another baby anyway, because it's quite hard.
No, not for me. Not for me yet.
Yeah, exactly. But I know it also kind of comes across a hyperemesis sufferer's mind. You do start thinking to the future and you do start thinking, I wonder if I could do this again. So for you, it is, you would love to have more children, but obviously it would be a big step and you'd have to really think about it and hopefully get much better care and treatment options in place before you did.
Yeah, I said to my mum, I went, sorry, but the way and everything I've been through, this is your only granddaughter. I'm not being mean.
No.
With one, I can give her everything, can look after her and that.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same as you. My son's nearly five now and he's my only. And, you know, it's been a difficult decision just to have one, actually, because there is a little bit of stigma around just having one. People always like to say, oh, when you're going to give him a sibling. And, you know, it has got a little bit harder recently because he started to say, oh, mummy, can I have a sister for Christmas? And I'm like, no. Anything else? I'll take Christmas toys. Or, you know, we'll look online, anything else, but I can't give you a sister. And even if I wanted to, I couldn't guarantee it would be a girl. So that would be the other problem. So I do understand where you're coming from. So in terms of your, like, the rest of your family, did they, obviously at this time as well, people wouldn't have been able to really come and see you anyway because of COVID. So have you been able to explain to them what this was like because they couldn't see you?
I said I felt like, not to over exaggerate, but I felt like I was dying.
Yeah.
It felt like the worst hangover ever kind of thing.
Yeah.
I was very confused. I was out with it. I had to have my mum explain everything after I came out of hospital with her. I just said, I don't wish it on my worst enemy.
No, exactly. And do you think they understand that and they can appreciate what you've been through?
Yeah, because we watched your documentary and they went, is that how you felt? I was like, yeah, I wanted to die. And and because I heard that some nurses offer abortion, would have offered it, I would have.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not, well, again, being mean.
No, absolutely. I mean, and you saw me in the film, that's exactly what I said. You know, I wanted one. I was so desperate and I'm obviously so pleased that one doctor said, no, just give me another day with you before you make this decision. Because if she hadn't have been there, I think that is the decision that I would have made. Because I just, like you said it perfectly, you just feel like you're dying.
Yeah.
I wondered, actually, would you ever think about complaining about some of your treatment that you had?
Because I can't remember much, as I said before. My mum is gonna ring pals to discuss the treatment I got and what I've been through, because she was very disgusted at the way some of the nurses and the midwives were towards me during my pregnancy, especially up to the last point of it.
Well, that's really great to hear. So PALS is the Patient Advice and Liaison Service, where you can go to and access kind of information, but also make complaints and talk about experiences that people have been through. So I'm really pleased to hear that. And that's actually mm-hmm. really good advice, Sophie, that PALS is there for you to be able to do that. So, and like you said, bless your mum. I mean, she would have seen all of this, because you do forget things. Like, I'm 5 years on, and even when I was making the film, and like the director was like, oh, so what happened here? And I was like, I honestly don't know. I cannot remember. And then I'll talk to my husband and he'll go, do you not remember this happening? I'm like, no.
Yeah. She was like, do you remember this? I was like, well, no. And she was like, oh, this happened. I was like, really?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm so, so sorry for the way I was. And she said, well, it's not your fault, darling. It's not your fault.
No, it's not our fault. But yeah, you do feel guilty when you hear some of the things you might have said or how you've been and stuff. Because you are,
yeah.
You know, I wasn't the best wife, put it that way, during my high premises pregnancy.
Yes.
That's really, really great to hear that your mum's going to do that. And I hope something comes from that. And some of the people who treated you learn from their mistakes, you know, because I think everyone deserves a second chance. And I love the NHS. I'm a massive advocate for it. But I think if you do something wrong and someone tells you, then you learn from that experience so you don't do it again.
If you're currently in hospital and suffering with high premises and want to speak to someone about your treatment, you can find officers from PALS in your local hospital. If you are not happy with an NHS service, you can make a complaint, and you should complain to the person or organisation providing the service first, such as the GP or the midwife. Alternatively, you can complain to the commissioner of that service, either NHS England or the Area Clinical Commissioning Group. They are also known as CCGs.
Well, thank you so much. Like I said, thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story. And I wish you, your lovely daughter, your boyfriend and your fabulous mum, all the best going forward.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Hyperemesis Files. If you have been affected by anything that has been spoken about in today's podcast, please visit your local hyperemesis charity or speak to a healthcare provider. For more information about the documentary Sick, The Battle Against HG, please visit www.thesickfilm.co.uk.